Welcome to the Exec MBA podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Molly Just and Dylan Baer. Molly and Dylan are both second-year students in our Executive MBA class of 2021, and they are also married to one another. This is our first couples podcast episode. Yes, that's right, a little bit of podcast history here on the Exec MBA podcast. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. We talk with Molly and Dylan about their backgrounds, how they decided to pursue an MBA, how they knew this was the right time for them to go back to school, and so much more. So without further ado, here is my interview with Molly Just and Dylan Baer. Molly, Dylan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us, Brett.
Hey, Brett, good to be here.
I'm having flashbacks to your prospective student conversation. I think you were both on that call when you were learning more about DAR and you scheduled some time. I think I remember this is Molly and also Dylan on that call. So this feels like it's all come full circle.
All old friends now.
Exactly. Y'all are except in quarter eight of the program, which, you know, it's very, very close to the end. How does that feel?
It's flown by, so I can't imagine. I'm shocked that we're in quarter eight already. It's been going really fast.
Yeah, Dylan? For me, it's a little bittersweet, kind of awesome to be nearing the finish line, but also a little bit of anxiety. Like, did I learn enough to justify all of this time?
Well, I hope the answer is yes. We're going to talk a little bit more about your stories and how things are going generally in the program and all these kinds of questions. But before we get there, I want to check in with you to see just how's life? How are things? Obviously, a lot going on in the world right now. Y'all doing okay?
Yeah, I think, you know, with school, we've just been really busy. I think that's one blessing of being at school during COVID is that, you know, between school and, you know, our daughter Lillian, who's 18 months and a handful, and work, I think that's kind of shuttered us from the gravity of the situation. Like, we're just always on the go, and school has kind of been a nice way to, like, focus our energy that probably a lot of people are worrying about COVID right now, and I think we're really focused on school. So that's how I'm doing, just very busy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think we've talked to some people, especially early on before everybody really got the swing of things, talking about how much their life was disrupted and kind of sometimes how bored they were. And we're like, well, we don't have that problem at all. So we've just been, you know, trying to keep all the plates in the air. And mm-hmm. We just moved. So that's one thing off of our plate a little bit that we had also been juggling for quite a while. So,
yeah, I'm trying to do the math here. So you've got an 18-month-old, you moved, you're both doing Darden's Executive MBA program, you've got jobs and life stuff. We've had many conversations here on the podcast about people with full plates. I think these might be some of the fullest plates we've heard about thus far. So thank you for taking time out for this conversation. And also, I should note this is for people who track the history of the podcast. I assume there are a few people out there that are interested in this kind of thing. We are over 140 episodes in now, but this is our first partner conversation where we've had two students who are, you know, married, doing the program together in the same class. And so thank you for being a part of history here with this podcast episode.
Well, we're honored to be the first married couple on it. So thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So for our listeners, I want to learn a little bit more about you and your background. So Dylan, let's start with you. What did you do before coming to Darden? What are you doing currently?
Yeah, so my first real job out of high school, I guess, was in the military. I joined the military in 2002, went on to become a Green Beret, and ended up spending 8 years in the military with several deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan. I was injured pretty badly in Afghanistan in 2008 and ultimately led to a medical retirement in 2010. From there, I went and got a master's degree from another school and worked in defense contracting for 4 or 5 years. And then kind of started diving into cybersecurity and analysis a bit more at that time and went to work at Discover Card as a cybersecurity threat intelligence analyst. which was in Chicago and ended up not being a good fit for our life. So I ended up looking for work back home and ended up, for the last 5.5 years, I've been working at Risk Placement Services, which is a wholesale insurance broker, and I focus on executive liability risks, professional and cyber liability. So that's what I've been doing.
All right. Same question for you, Molly. What's your background and what are you doing currently?
Sure. So I went to UVA for undergrad. So double who here. I met Dylan in my junior year of college. I was a Red Cross volunteer at Walter Reed during the summers. And so I met him while he was recovering through some connections we made at the Pentagon. At Walter Reed, I was able to get a job at the Pentagon after I graduated. So I spent 3 or 4 years there working as a special assistant for the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology Logistics. So he basically controls the $250 billion the DoD spends on weapon systems and R&D. And so after 4 years, I popped out into the private sector and I became an aerospace and defense consultant. So working on similar issues, but for the, you know, Lockheeds and Boeings of the world, as opposed to directly for the government.
And so I wonder how long you thought about an MBA before taking this step, Molly. Is it something that you thought about for a long time or relatively new idea?
No, absolutely. I've been thinking about it for a really long time. I've always kind of had an interest in starting my own firm. And so it was something that I was really interested in. And I know Dylan has always had an entrepreneurial bent. So it was something that we've both been interested in. And once we had our daughter, I could tell that life speeds up really quickly. And I thought if we didn't get this out of the way, we were just going to put it off forever. And so when I saw that UVA had an Arlington campus, 5 minutes from our home, I was like, this is it. We need to apply and we need to go now. And luckily Dylan thought it was a good idea too.
Yeah, there's a certain saying where there's no perfect time to do this, but there's certainly better times or maybe windows of opportunity. And so trying to make it all work. And we've had couples come through the program who said, you know, if we were to do this separately, it might even be more disruptive than just both of us doing it at the same time. Dylan, you had mentioned that you already had done a master's degree, and roughly a third of our matriculated students, for our listeners who are interested in learning a bit more about this, roughly a third of our matriculated students will already have completed one graduate level degree before coming back to school. How did you decide that an MBA was right for you? Is it something that you always thought about?
Yeah, so my first master's degree was more of a transition out of the military degree and kind of helped me figure out how to transition into the civilian workforce, and was more focused on that intelligence career that I had been pursuing before that. As I kind of got into the corporate world a little bit more, I realized that most of my life had been spent in the cost center of generally risk is not on the production side of the profit side of the business. So as I started learning more about business, it just became really interesting to me, especially entrepreneurial ventures. And so I had actually applied to some business schools back in, I think, 2014 or 15. And for whatever reason at that time, I decided not to go. And then when Molly brought this opportunity up, there's a lot of anxiety about whether or not it was a good idea for both of us to do it at the same time. But it was kind of more like, let's rip this Band-Aid off and get it done. Otherwise, we're going to be dragging it out. Somebody will be upset that, you know, we didn't get to do it or something like that. So it's been a really good experience for both of us to do it. It's got its challenges, us all doing it at the same time, but it'll also all be done at the same time. So
that's right. And there's a natural disruption that happens when you add something like school to your life. And I wonder how y'all have kind of gotten to a place where you've figured out a schedule that works, a rhythm that works. Where did you start on that journey? How long did it take for you to kind of say, all right, we've figured this out? Dylan, I'm going to stick with you and also get Molly's perspective on this question. Is where you started where you ended up on this, or what did you learn along the way?
Yeah, so we're very fortunate that our daughter goes to sleep at 7 o'clock on the dot pretty much every night. And so she was about 6 months old when we started the program. and she still continues to go to bed at 7 o'clock. So that's kind of been our schedule. You know, 5 o'clock, we pick her up from daycare around 4 o'clock. We kind of wrap up our work and do dinner, bath, and put her down at 7, and then it's time for class. So that's actually worked out quite well for us. I think the hardest part is when we get close to OGRs and you've got a backload of homework that you've got to catch up on and cases to read. It gets really tough to kind of cram all of that in the last, if you're not planning ahead. So I think we've also tried to be very diligent with the free time that we do have and try to, you know, get a case in early. So
yeah.
That's certainly a strategy that we hear a lot from students, is do a little bit every day rather than letting it back up. Molly, I wonder if you have any thoughts on how you've managed the time component of this and the commitment of school with everything else going on.
Sure, absolutely. So I have I think the baby going to bed at 7 is like the critical thing for us, because working from 7 to 9 was like kind of just our routine. And, you know, sometimes doing an hour during our lunch break at work, that, you know, COVID has cut down on my commute, obviously. So I found myself with a little bit more time. So that's been helpful too, knocking out some work in the morning and the afternoon.
And that's right. Everybody finds the schedule that works for them. For everybody who's listening to this and you're wondering, what's so magical about 7 o'clock? As Dylan noted, typically on most Tuesday and Thursday evenings, there will be distance class from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. So it is convenient that your daughter has this 7 p.m. bedtime to try to fit all this in.
It's funny, he says convenient, but that was something very well planned.
that was all Molly, but it's become very convenient after she planned it.
Well, I'm curious about your backgrounds and, you know, coming to Darden, because I think we also have this sort of idea that sometimes we hear from prospective students that people worry that they don't have the right background, or they didn't take X classes, or from a career standpoint, haven't done the quote unquote right things. And, you know, to be a contributor in a business school classroom. And Molly, I'm curious, how did you kind of feel about the academic transition? Were there things that you did sort of to brush up, to get ready for it? How did you think about, you know, contributing to those conversations in class?
Sure. So I think business fundamentals, which happens at LR1, as well as the MBA math prep that Darden sends out, was a really good way for me to kind of get back in the academic mindset. You know, I took a lot of math classes in college, and so it all came back pretty quickly to me. I felt pretty well prepared going in, and I didn't find it too difficult to ramp back into that, you know, school mindset.
Yeah, it's interesting to sort of, we do make resources available, but it's interesting to think about maybe one of the challenges for folks is just having to study again and get that discipline, because you have very full days, right? You work and then all of a sudden, you know, you come home and you've got dinner time and bath and all these kinds of things. And then, as you noted, you know, a couple hours for studying, just that energy management. How do you sort of use some of those muscles again? Dylan, was that something that you focused on, or the academic piece? Were there things that you found helpful as you approached the challenge?
The business fundamentals were crucial for me. I lacked a lot of the more quantitative skills that were necessary. In the early days, I really had to rely on Molly to help me with some of it, as well as my learning team and other people in the class. And, you know, I've been able to rely on some of Molly's learning team as well. So that's all been really good. It took me a while to kind of get back into the swing of things, just because it had been so long since I had been in school, and I'm not naturally the best student in the world either. So I think I've figured out my own system that works for me now, and been able to rely on others when I need help. So
let's stick with some of that for maybe a follow-up question here. The learning team, some of our listeners may not necessarily know that much about it. We talk about it a bunch here on the podcast. It's a team of 5-6 people from a lot of different backgrounds that are there as a touch point for you as you get ready for class, deep grief after class. How have you asked for help? What does the team look like? How do people help each other out? I think it's something we talk a lot about, but specific examples always help tell that story.
Yeah, so the learning team is great because it, you know, as you mentioned, it does bring together, you know, five or six people with different backgrounds. And so on our team, we have a couple professional consultants, two former military guys. We have somebody that does M&A analysis pretty regularly, and then another person. So really broad background, and we each rely on each other's strengths. You know, not so much the quant from me, but there are other people on the team that are pretty good at that stuff. And you know, I think the most benefit that we get from each other is when we get close to the OGRs and the on-ground residencies, and we are overloaded with a lot of work. We can kind of split up not necessarily the reading of the cases. I think you almost have to read. You have to read every case, but the note taking, which can, you know, for me, if I'm taking diligent notes on a case, it takes me three times as long to get through it. So if you can split up the note taking and kind of share that amongst that responsibility amongst your learning team, and then everybody still has to read the cases, you can get a lot more done in that short period of time.
Molly, have you worked closely with your learning team? Has that been an important touch point for you?
Yeah, absolutely. My learning team was great. And I feel like Dylan and I joke, you know, we each got the learning team we need. So I know it's random, but I feel like the way the person distribution happened, you know, I think my learning team, we all had like a pretty good feel on like quantitative analysis. But we did split a lot of the cases up. You know, we split the reading and we all trusted each other, and we would have like these quick 1 hour conversations of like going through all the key subjects and focus areas and highlights and insights, and then be done with it. While Dylan's learning team would probably have like multiple 2 hour conversations where that would just be too much for me. But my learning team was great and still work with them. You know, I think being able to leverage two learning teams is definitely a highlight of being married in the same program.
Yeah, and I think, of course, you have the whole class available to you as well. I mean, that's one of the things that we also reference here. The learning teams, we do try to think about some things as we're putting them together, as you know, and as has been noted here. So industry background, academic background, and that's really kind of a partnership between admissions and student affairs as we think about the class and putting together these small teams. So I'm glad to hear that they've been helpful to you. And each learning team, of course, has its own schedule. So it's interesting to hear you talk about, you know, Molly, your team meeting for more shorter periods of time, and then Dylan's team maybe a little bit more expansive meetings. So you're here in quarter eight. This is for context. This is a 10 2-month quarter programs, 21 months in duration. Quarter eight effectively represents, you know, months 16 through 18 or so of the program. What has gotten easier for you, Molly, over the course of this time? You know, we talk about the learning curves and the adjustment, but undoubtedly there have been things that have gotten easier. What has gotten easier for you?
I think class participation for me has gotten easier. I think as I read through a case now, like I can easily pull out 3 to 4 insights that I want to bring up, or, you know, anecdotes from my own personal experience that I think relate to the topics that we're going to discuss. And prior to that, you know, I'd read through a case and be like, oh, well, I'm not sure I have anything to add. And I think that's something that Darden has taught me. Like, I'm much more open, and I understand like what my background is better and what value I do have to add.
Was there an adjustment with the case method when you came in? I mean, sometimes students, as you mentioned, can find it a bit more challenging to figure out how they can contribute to the conversation or even getting comfortable speaking up in class. What was your experience with that early on?
Sure. So I did not have a ton of background with the case method prior to Darden. And I think it was slightly intimidating at LR1. You know, I'm somebody who prepares a lot for class, but not necessarily is, you know, one of the people with their hand up all the time. And so, you know, just getting the courage to add value when I have something to add was an evolution with the case method.
No, that's a great point. And I think people kind of are fascinated about like, what is contribution? It's not always just having the right answer. It's, you know, providing something that's insightful or helpful to the conversation. I've also been struck by the fact that talking with members of the Network of Executive Women, it sounds like they're also sort of created this feedback loop for women in the class around class participation, sharing feedback with each other about, you know, contributions and things like that. Have you participated in that at all?
Yep, I have. Yeah. So I received feedback for the last few OGRs and found it helpful. I think it's always helpful to get feedback based on participation and your executive presence. So yeah, that's been great.
So Dylan, how about for you? I mean, many of our students don't come with a background in the case method. So this type of learning, this flipped classroom model and this participatory approach is a change. What was it like for you getting up to speed?
Yeah, for me, you know, learning how to kind of deal with the case, to read it and kind of break it down into the important pieces, it took a little bit of adjustment. I think I struggled also with kind of being able to take my real life experiences and feel like they were actually relevant or valuable in the class when there's a lot of really high performers and experienced people in the class, to feel like my experiences were actually on par or at least worth sharing with others. But once you get comfortable with your classmates and, you know, you have some of those conversations, you get more comfortable with that, I believe.
Yeah, I was going to ask what changed. Was it just time? Was there a conversation you had with a classmate who said, sometimes we hear from people, they say, like, somebody comes up to them after class and says, you should speak more. I really appreciated what you shared. Was it just time for you?
I think it was just getting comfortable with my classmates. I didn't have a problem with actually. I do think maybe in the beginning I got a few more like participation points than, and I'm air quotes, which you won't see on the podcast, but I got participation points and I really have tried to turn those into contribution points, right? And I think there's a big difference there. And I noticed that you use the word contribution sometimes in class, they throw out participation, but there's a big difference. So making sure that my comments are not just checking the box, but they're actually providing relevant insight and contribution to the class.
Well, as a decent podcast host, I have to ask to you, what's the difference between participation and contribution?
I mean, I think anybody can participate. You just raise your hand and you say something on Zoom or in class, but if it doesn't actually add value to at least somebody in the class, then that's just participation and it's not contribution.
I think that's a fair point. And, you know, I think that's probably something that people develop a feel for over the course of the program, right? What is going to add value? Where can you get in there and add value to the conversation generally? So you're now here. Graduation is on the horizon. You're starting to take electives too, I believe, soon. So what are you looking forward to, Molly, in the last couple quarters of the program? What are you excited about?
Sure. I'm really excited about the investment classes. There's a securities analysis class and there's an investment class that focuses on Black Scholes. So I think that'll be really interesting. There's also a supply chain class. Sadly, there's more electives that I want to take than time, but besides the electives, I'm also just excited to spend the remaining time with my classmates who we've become really close with.
That is a familiar refrain. I think oftentimes we'll do some podcast conversations with folks at the very end of the program. And to a person, they don't talk so much about class, they just talk about relationships and wish they would have made just a little bit more time during the program, which I think is great for people to hear. Dylan, how about for you? What are you looking forward to as you close out the program?
Yeah, well, I would definitely agree with the relationships part. It's tough because of COVID and being online. You know, we talk about sometimes you just don't get that extra 5 or 15 minutes before and after class to kind of see people and talk to them, get to know them a little bit more. And that's been one of the great tragedies of kind of doing this program during a pandemic, but we've still made really great relationships with a lot of people in the class. As far as what I'm excited about, so I came into this program really hoping to, not knowing necessarily what I wanted to do when I left. And I thought it was going to be around something entrepreneurial. And I believe in the last few quarters, I've finally identified what that is. And I'm working on putting together with a couple other people in the class, I was able to get into an entrepreneurship through acquisition residential course for this quarter. So I'm a little overloaded this quarter, but it's kind of opened up my eyes a little bit. And we're putting together an independent study for quarter 10 to do some practice entrepreneurship through acquisition, doing a search fund. And so that's kind of what I plan to do in one way or another, identifying a business to purchase and installing myself as CEO and operator at some point in the next several years. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
That's cool. Some of our listeners may not know much about search funds or entrepreneurship through acquisition. How did you get from, you know, potentially from this idea of entrepreneurship, you have the idea, you start the business, to you find a business that maybe is not quite performing as, there's an opportunity, right? There's a spread and you can take the business from where they are to a better place and potentially sell the company. How did you get from maybe this one idea of entrepreneurship to entrepreneurship through acquisition?
Well, I think, so I was aware of ETA, entrepreneurship through acquisition, before I joined the program, although I didn't know a ton about it. I knew one person that went down that route. And so as I started learning more about it, started realizing that the opportunity there was in, you know, a very high percentage of startup businesses fail. And if you can get in and purchase a business that has already gotten through that stage, your long-term chances of success are a lot higher. And the path to like leading a large organization is truncated significantly. On top of that, this, you know, right now there's a huge, massive transfer of wealth and business from older generations that are retiring and moving out of the workforce. And so there are a lot of opportunities in that space to take over an existing long-lasting business and make it your own.
That's very interesting. I hadn't thought about it. How did you find the classmates to work on this with?
So it's something that we started talking about, I believe, in our we had an entrepreneurial thinking class with Greg Fairchild, and it was mentioned in that class, and a few other people had already started to go down the route as well. So we just kind of started putting it together. We put a WhatsApp group together and have been talking about it, and it's just gotten the ball rolling, and it's picking up some steam. So,
well, that's great to hear. And how do any of these conversations happen these days? On either WhatsApp or Slack channel somewhere. So that's great. So Molly, coming back to you for this question, it's also be a question for Dylan too. What advice would you have for couples who may be thinking about doing the program together? Anything that you've learned along the way that you would want to share here?
Sure. I think just relying on your partner for support and your partner's learning team, you know, and just making a consistent routine that aligns with your family's life. So you still have time to go on date nights and, you know, spend time with your family. I don't think, you know, Dylan and I were really big on making sure that Darden didn't impact our time with Lillian. And so we were really never working when she was awake. We just like made it, you know, there was some times when we had finals where one of us would take her and have some alone time and the other one would do finals. But I think just making sure that Darden fits in organically with your life is important. And it's very doable. Rely on your learning team. You know, rely on your partner. That's what I would say.
Dylan, for the partners out there listening, thinking about maybe doing this as a we thing, a couple moving through the program together, what would you advise?
Yeah, I think all of that that Molly said is really great. One of the things that Molly and I found early on is that we're really great together and we are really great working with our learning teams, but we're not necessarily so great studying together one-on-one. Just we have completely different learning styles. So you don't necessarily have to rely on your partner for all of that. That's why the learning teams are there too. So we've been able to kind of leverage each other's experiences and stuff like that without necessarily having to study together all the time. And that's been great to kind of, you know, realize that about ourselves, but then also be able to rely on others in the program to do that.
Is that something you knew before the program, or I guess you probably hadn't done school together? Maybe you had a hunch, Dylan? Was that a surprise?
I think we could have definitely guessed. Dylan really likes like a group study vibe, and I'm more of like a solo, knock it out, get my reading done and wrap it up kind of person. But different strokes for different folks. So yeah, something we learned about each other.
All right, so the program even comes with insights. That's great. any last tips, Molly, that you would share with our prospective student listeners, things that you wish you would have known when you were in their shoes or anything that's on your mind?
Yeah, so I would just say like really focus on the relationships. I've been so impressed by my classmates, more so than I could have even imagined. People are nice and friendly and are just wonderful. You know, I started growing out a government practice within my current firm as a way to start my own consulting firm. And I relied heavily on my classmates, you know, helping me get contracts and helping me build out business plans. And I could not have done it without them. And so I would just say, yeah, take time to get to know your classmates and like really develop those friendships. Because when you graduate, you know, besides the knowledge and skills that you're building, like those friendships are what you're taking away. And I know Dylan and I have made some incredible, incredible friends. I just feel really lucky to have met our classmates, and you know, we just have a wonderful class. And I'm sure every class is like that. So I would just say focus on the relationships, and everything else will come along naturally.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic point. And that is ideally the thing that people are really talking about as they go through this and afterwards is, yeah, I learned a lot and got it certainly from a skill development standpoint. I got a lot out of it. But I still see Darden people all the time. You know, I keep in touch with folks. I was on a class of 2019 Q&A not so long ago. We were doing a webinar with some of the alums. And I think several of the alums on there just said, like, they basically hang out with Darden people at this point. You know, that's, you know, that's the network that they have at work, at home, and, you know, at just that's how it is. It's a whole family environment. So
no, you're absolutely right. I just had a birthday party, and it was all Darden people. And it was, you know, those are my friends now. You know, it's nice. It's nice.
Dylan, how about for you? Any last words of advice you would share with our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, the relationships are key. Definitely dig into those. I think that's where you're going to get the most bang for your buck, probably. I would also say that, you know, when you have a chance and you identify with a professor, you know, spend some extra time to get to know them. They're a huge wealth of knowledge. And I can see myself for sure reaching back out to them when I'm in a predicament at some point. And the last thing I would say is something that I discovered too late, but Molly has spent a lot of time putting energy into, is the coaching that you get from the career development CDC, Career Development Center. I did a few coaching classes early on, and I think it just takes a little bit of trial and error to find the coach that you really identify with. But I think it's worthwhile to say, keep doing that until you find the right coach for you, because your personality has to mesh up. And I just recently found a really good coach there, and it's been a huge change in the way that I prepare for meetings and think about planning, you know, the rest of my, or the next stage of my life and all that stuff. So I would say utilize that resource, but don't just try it once. And if it doesn't work out, keep trying until you find somebody that you really identified with.
Molly, I'm curious about how you use that time with the crew. I mean, obviously, I'm sure a number of ways, but how have those conversations been helpful to you?
Sure. So I think it started with PAC, where I was really impressed with, you know, that type of class. And I took my plan that I developed in PAC, which is the professional advancement course, and brought it to the CDC. And I met with a couple people there and I said, hey, you know, this is the plan that I kind of developed in PAC. You know, I want to become an entrepreneur at my company, develop, you know, a separate business unit, and then spin out into my own firm. And I want to implement it over the next 18 months. And you know, I repeatedly met with Kellogg and just built the plan out. And, you know, part of my efforts in building out my own company included a lot of informational interviews. So, you know, in addition to updating my resume so I could send it along for informational interviews, it was, hey, how should I go about this meeting? What questions should I ask? You know, what are my key objectives? What do I want to get out of it? When is a follow-up appropriate? And, you know, I think the information, the Darden network informational interviews were really crucial in, you know, helping build my confidence to start my own company. And I don't think I would have approached those meetings as prepared without the CDC. So I've used them for resume building, for informational interview prep, for, you know, job in interviews, you know, even just thinking through like multiple future options in my life, you know, just talking with them and bouncing ideas around. And, you know, I will word vomit, you know, thoughts that I have, and they will put it in these like beautiful organized buckets and say, no, that completely makes sense. I have lots of good things to say about them.
Well, it's great to hear. Friends of the podcast, they've been on the podcast, Jim and Sarita and Kellogg have been on the podcast many times. And, you know, rarely does a student podcast interview go by without hearing about the professional advancement course and Connie Dunlop. So we've done it again. So Connie has returned yet again, professional advancement course as part of your story. So that's great to hear as well. So Molly and Dylan, thank you so much for your time today. It's been great talking with you, and congratulations on making a little bit of podcast history on this Thursday afternoon.
Well, thanks for having us, Brett.
Yeah, thank you.
And that was my interview with Molly Just and Dylan Baer, two students in our Executive MBA class of 2021. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we are all ears. We can be reached at exec, that's exec@darden.virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.